The founders and secularism is our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. In one of my documentaries that I've made for ProvidenceForum.org, these documentaries are on America's Christian roots. One of our guests was Eric Metaxas, and he makes this point, quote, "Every single one of the founders, including Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, knew that there was no way, genuinely no way, to have self-government and genuine liberty along the lines that they were proposing without a virtuous populace." And they understood that you can neither have virtue without faith. The very concept of a secular culture was not only foreign to them, it was anathema to them, end quote, from Eric Metaxas. This documentary, by the way, is called The Beginning of Wisdom, and it deals with the Bible and education in early America. Another guest in that program is retired Judge Darrell White. He is the founder and head of the American Judicial Alliance. And Judge Darrell White joins us now to discuss the founders of America and secularism. Judge, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, indeed, I would say so as well, Jerry, and thank you for spotlighting something so very important as what our founders, and I would say, and we ought to say about this concept of secularism, which was a foreign concept to the founders. In fact, I show that the Oxford University Press Dictionary, Oxford English Dictionary, 1971, did define secularism as having come into existence in 1851, I think it was, by a fellow by the name of G.J. Holyoake, who was looking for a word that meant the same thing as atheist, infidel, and skeptic, but did not carry the same negative connotation. And so we do well to talk about what secular and secularism and secular humanism is, because it was foreign to our founders.
Now, one of the things that the Supreme Court in earlier iterations, when they were very liberal, and they would make decisions like, oh, the kids can't pray in the schools, you can't have the Ten Commandments in the schools, and so forth. On occasion, they would allow something religious if it was, quote-unquote, ceremonial deism. In other words, it was along the lines of, well, okay, it's a tradition related to God and religion, but it doesn't really mean anything, so we'll allow that kind of thing through. But that says, wow, did the founders have integrity? I mean, was George Washington full of integrity when he issued a day of national thanksgiving, a proclamation for the whole nation to thank God that we had become a country? In other words, I think there's a disconnect between the founders, you know, if you really read their own writings versus today's secularists that try to, you know, make the founders to be more secular-minded than they really were.
Well, it's a cultural climate change. And that would be a good phraseology for us to call it, because, again, it did not exist. It was mentioned in passing in a 1961 decision called Torcaso versus Watkins, where it referenced secular humanism as a religion in America. And of course, if you look at the founding document of in the Humanist Manifesto, going back to the 30s, the cardinal principles of humanism is, number one, the universe is self-existing. It was not created. Number two, man is a part of nature and emerged as part of a continuous process. And then number five, the nature of the universe is depicted by modern science, it says, has no supernatural or cosmic guarantee of values. In other words, it's evolution. And we need to be mindful that our founders didn't have any, they were not ashamed of the words that you mentioned George Washington saying, and they weren't ashamed of the word sin. In fact, it would be well if folks would go look at a book written by Carl Menninger, MD, who was the founder of the Menninger Clinics. And the name of it is Whatever Became of Sin, published in 1973, which is a real bellwether year for a lot of the changes in our climate culture. But he references in that particular book that Eisenhower talked of the word sin in 1953 in his commander-in-chief's prayer, the speech that he gave. It was not mentioned, Menninger says, since then. It has not been mentioned after that. Now, of course, this was published in 1973, but I don't know that I am aware that the concept of sin has been mentioned. And so did we, Menninger asked at the end of the book, did we stop sinning? Rhetorically, that was his question. And so I'm mindful of the phrase that one of my favorite Democrat statesmen, Lewis Cass, who was in that founding generation, he's quoted as saying this: independent of its connection with human destiny hereafter, the fate of Republican government is indissolubly bound up with the fate of the Christian religion, and a people who reject its holy faith will find themselves the slaves of their own evil passions and of arbitrary power. And the sense of arbitrariness that we're sitting around waiting to see what the federal courts are going to do next is where we find ourselves today.
Can you reference what was that again that you just quoted?
Well, his name is Lewis Cass. He was an amazing fellow.
All right.
I think his statue is in Congress. In the halls of Congress.
And where would we find that quote if somebody wanted to see that quote? That's a fascinating quote.
Oh, goodness. I'll look.
Well, you let me know. Send it to me, and I'll post it on this post. And speaking of Eisenhower, you mentioned Eisenhower a few moments ago. Listen to this quote from Eisenhower from 1955. Without God, there could be no American form of government, nor an American way of life. Recognition of the Supreme Being is the first, the most basic expression of Americanism. Thus, the Founding Fathers saw it, and thus, with God's help, it will continue to be. Now, that's Eisenhower, President of the United States, a man, by the way, whose first name, as I understand it, comes in honor and recognition of Dwight L. Moody, a great evangelist of the 19th century.
Yes, indeed. And in line with that, the Elementary Textbook Evaluation Guide, published in 1961 by the Textbook Study League of San Gabriel, California, warned of the ultimate result of ignoring God as the source of individual rights. It said, and I've got this committed to memory, withhold from the children for one generation the truth of rights endowed by a creator, and our Constitution could be altered and our freedoms voted away without the citizens ever even knowing the cause of their slavery. That's a powerful indictment. And our Declaration of Independence is the first of America's organic laws. And I would urge judges and others to be talking about the fact that our organic laws reference the Creator four times. And that's our charter as a nation. We need to be mindful of that. And thank you for spotlighting these things, Jerry, on your program.
Sure. Now, what does that actually mean, organic law?
Well, there are numbers. I've looked up and actually published a list of synonyms for the word organic. Let me give you several of them. Acute, all-important, animate, basic, biological, binding, capital, cardinal, central, chief.
Okay, so that's the main. So when people say the four organic law documents in American history? I mean, I know the Constitution is one of them. I know the Declaration of Independence is one of them. What are the others, the other two?
It's the Articles of Confederation, which governed America for a dozen years, and the Northwest Ordinance that provided for statehood and said something very powerful. It says religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, comma, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged in the United States. And the word good, it's interesting to note, only appears one time in the Constitution. Only one reference to the word good, and it has to do with the standard of office for federal judges. Our federal justices and judges.
So is that in Article 3?
Yes.
Okay.
Article 3, Section 1. They serve for good behavior. They do not serve for life. And there have been impeachments. In fact, one occurred not too long ago when a federal district judge in New Orleans, Tom Porteous, who happened to be one of my classmates at LSU Law School, was impeached and removed for some unwise and actually criminal conduct. And so this notion of good behavior, but apart from the Bible, what is good? What is good indeed, Jerry? And so what words mean are very important. And there's a powerful quote from Paul Johnson in a book called Enemies of Society. If I might quote it, I think I've got it committed to memory. It
sure.
Says, one principal way in which our civilization is rendered vulnerable to assault is by the undermining of linguistic truth. Language is the bloodstream of a culture, the real infrastructure of civilization. Words, and a word has been described as the skin of a living thought, words can be prostituted and debauched, damaged by use, misuse, or intent, rendered untruthful or treacherous, devalued, aggrandized, stood as it were on their heads, or turned inside out. So long as we have language, we cannot be wholly enslaved or wholly uncivilized. Language is the framework for reason, and unless it is ordered and related to truth, well, then reason cannot express itself. And so the distortion of what words mean allowing the Supreme Court to have sole final cognizance over that is not something that would have pleased our founders. And as a matter of fact, they put Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2 in the Constitution, which allows Congress to limit and exclude the federal courts from jurisdiction. You may remember when Judge Roy Moore was removed from office as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, the Constitution Restoration Act was filed in Congress. It had, I think, 40 co-sponsors in the House, about 10 in the Senate. And what it did, or what it said, is that the federal courts would have no jurisdiction under this provision, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2, over, and here was the language, the acknowledgement of God as the sovereign source of law, liberty, or government. That's a very powerful concept, and the Louisiana legislature and the Idaho legislatures have both gone on record as saying they would like Congress to enact the Constitution Restoration Act to limit the federal court's jurisdiction in this regard. Tom Daschle did it when it was
okay.
We have
10 seconds left. 10 seconds.
Okay. All right. Well, it needs to be looked at, the Constitution Restoration Act, Jerry.
All right, and I'll give you a website, ajatoday.com. Judge Darrell White. Thank you, Judge. All the best.
Godspeed.